Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on today's episode we will be discussing the Nazi and zombie action horror film Overlord, as well as ranking our favorite zombie genre mashup films. But first, let me introduce my favorite canceled Cloverfield project, Donnie Nelson. How are you?
What? Well, technically not canceled. It's still waiting in the wings.
The Cloverfield parts got canceled.
Yeah.
They clovered my field.
Okay, Jason, bad joke's over. We need to... bad jokes.
We need to try now.
Something like that.
Okay. So... yeah.
Sorry, did I just derail you, like, the Cloverfield universe?
Yes.
Okay. Well, in that case, thinking. I'm sorry.
I just can't stop thinking about the Clover that could have been.
Oh, it still might come. They're working on it.
I know, but I want it now.
Maybe
I wonder,
for Christmas.
Have you heard anything about how this was supposed to even connect to the other Cloverfield movies?
No. I don't think anything solid has ever come out saying how this was supposed to connect, because it was so far in the past from what the other Cloverfield movies are. But I think it might have had something to do with the serum.
Probably. That's what I was thinking. Alright. And, that's not really a spoiler, because I'm pretty sure they show it in the trailer.
No.
So, before... oh, man, what's going on in my throat? Before we continue this discussion of Cloverlord... took me way too long to think of that.
I'm leaving. Okay, bye.
Okay, before we continue this discussion of Overlord... let me ask, what is the best thing that you have seen recently?
You're not going to like it.
I barely do.
Well, as the time of this recording, we're not too far removed from Thanksgiving. And on Thanksgiving Day, I watched the movie that all people should watch on Thanksgiving. Can you guess, Jason?
Con Air.
No, there is a very specific date in which I already watched that movie during the year. So, no. It's Spider-Man, because it's a Thanksgiving film. I'm lying to you. It was, of course, Son-in-Law, the Pauly Shore classic that everyone loves.
No, that is false.
What? Wait, what?
Not everyone loves that movie.
I think the people who don't like that movie just haven't seen it yet, honestly.
I think that you're in the minority.
Well, let's kind of test this on the spot. Have you seen Son-in-Law, Jason?
Have I seen all of it?
No, yeah, well,
wait,
you have to have seen all of it.
Is Son-in-Law the one where he's a farmer?
Well, here's the thing, and I'll kind of set up for people who haven't seen Son-in-Law what the premise of Son-in-Law is, which is it's one of the... four of the five like major Pauly Shore vehicles during that time period. This is the one where he is a character named Crawl, and he's in California, and there's a university in California where in which he lives. He is not the main character. Carla Gugino, who plays Rebecca, who lives on a farm with her, you know, unassuming farmer family, and then she is the valedictorian of her school and wants to move to a university or college that suits her best, and she thinks it's this university that's in California. So she moves out there, and then she gets really sad and homesick, but then Crawl, who's the resident advisor in her dormitory, gets her to get out of her comfort zone and then transforms her, and she enjoys it out there. And then she feels really bad for him because plans fell through on Thanksgiving to go back to Las Vegas where his family is. And she's just like, hey, why don't you come home with me? And he's like, oh, cool. So they go back to the Midwest to her farmer life. And everyone's very surprised how she's changed and nobody likes him. And then over the course of the movie, you can kind of imagine what happens, which is the family, you know, eventually warms up to him. And the reason it's called son-in-law is because she already had a boyfriend in which she left and said that they'd still stay true to each other. And she has reservations about marrying him. And so she kind of pressures Pauly Shore's character, Crawl, into saying that he already proposed, hence the title of the movie, Son-in-Law. And then just wacky hijinks ensue from there.
I think we have differing opinions on the word wacky.
But, well, yeah. What I mean, it's just kind of good old-fashioned fun, Jason. you don't like that kind of stuff.
No, I just don't like Pauly Shore.
Right. Well, what about... There's a scene in the movie where he's finally turning it around, and he's proven that he can actually do farm work in his own wacky California way, right? Mm-hmm. And then he does all of his work, and he's like, aw, yeah, swiggity-wiggity, you know, wee, you know, and he goes to... he goes into this carabiner... or a combine. He finds a combine, and he starts... he turns it on. He just wants to listen to some good old country music, but then realizes he accidentally turned it on, and then he starts going through the cornfield or the wheat field, and at the very end of it, after the farmer's gotten freaked out and run after him, and he's done just fine. There's a plane that flies over the field, and it goes from to the point of view of the plane pilot, and he looks down and he's spelt Crawl in the field, which is just a good gag all around, Jason.
Sure.
So now that I've destroyed your faith in everybody who watches films and you know that they'll never take the right thing from anything, what was the best thing that you watched?
Recently, the best thing that I think that I have seen is that documentary, Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press, I think is the full title. It's on Netflix, and it's about the Gawker Hulk Hogan sex tape lawsuit. And I'm not going to lie, I was very hesitant to watch it because... really anything with the words Hulk Hogan sex tape just don't tend to not interest me. And I even remember like when all this happened and when his sex tape got like leaked, and my first thought was, why? Who is clamoring for this? But no, the documentary was really good and it was really interesting, and they cover... They start by showing, I'm gonna get political for half a second. They start by showing the Trump's relationship with the media. Okay, that's the end of that. And then they go backwards into this event of Hulk Hogan suing Gawker, and then they also cover another case where, basically, a newspaper was bought and told not to do its job out in Las Vegas. And so it was just really interesting because these were both cases that... One of them, you know, the Hulk Hogan thing, that was a big case that I heard about. But I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm just not up on my journalist lingo. But I was not aware of the ramifications that sort of case could bring. And so it was really interesting, and it brought a new light onto some things that I had heard about, but I guess I didn't fully understand. So, yeah.
I mean, that's what those are meant to do, right? It's supposed to be part informational, well, mostly informational, hopefully you're dealing with just, you know, facts when it comes to that stuff, and you're not getting a whole bunch of editorial. But at some point, a documentary like that is going to have, as light as it may be or heavy as it may be, always a narrative, always a point of view. So, you know, it's hard to say one way or the other, besides looking into, like, the past of the filmmakers themselves.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it, and I really appreciated it, and I'm glad that I finally, you know, got myself up into watching something about Hulk Hogan's sex tape.
You don't have to bring it back to that.
That's what it's always been about for me.
Well, like, they mention it in name, right? And they never actually show it, because otherwise that would be bad.
They show clips, but they don't show any of the actual sexing.
Right.
If that makes sense.
No, I get what you mean.
But
I'm yeah. sure there was a but.
So, all right, now that I did want to say, I can't remember who, I gotta look it up. I can't remember who directed it. It's this guy who I am not familiar with. Okay, never mind. Anyway, it was really good. I highly recommend people check it out. It's on Netflix. It's somewhat unconventional, but highly enjoyable.
Yeah, anyway. It's not a huge leap out of what already many people have access to, which is Netflix.
So, that being said, what is the worst thing that you have seen recently?
Well, Jason, the worst thing I saw this week, or in the recent past here, is the Pauly Shore vehicle that we all know and love, Son-in-Law, was the worst thing I saw this week. No. So, since we're kind of still doing this binary thing where we're doing, like, best and worst, the worst thing I saw this week was just the other night, and it was Ralph Breaks the Internet, which was... I watched it, and I'm not saying that's not, like, a good time. It's not a good way to spend 2 hours of your time, especially in a movie theater. And I got to test out the movie theaters at my local cinema that has those comfy seats that most theaters have nowadays, the recliners, which was super nice and almost made me go to sleep like an old person. But... regardless of that, Ralph Breaks the Internet is a sequel that is... I don't want to say it's unconventional, but... because unconventional means that it could be good or bad, and I think it has structure issues, because the beginning of the film is, like, you know, like a good springboard that you kind of know from what the structure of the first movie was. But, like, a huge portion of the middle of that film is when they get to the internet, you just see a bunch of internet jokes. Mm-hmm. And there's no real narrative. And I'm not saying, like, film is a very vast and open thing. It doesn't have to adhere to a structure or pacing or a typical narrative or, you know, stuff like that. But in the case of this... the problem I have with it is that they have a very structured idea and launch pad at the beginning, and then they finally wrap back around to that at the very end, and the middle is very out of line with that. Like, most of the stuff in the middle is very loosey-goosey, and then it's just a platform to make jokes about the internet. Very, like, PG... jokes about the internet, since it is a kid's film. And then when they finally come around to... it's almost like we're introduced to a story, we go away from the story for about an hour or so, and then we go back to the main story at the very end. And honestly, like, characters kind of making dumb decisions, which the conflict between the two leads, the John C. Reilly and Sarah Silverman, Vanellope and Wreck-It Ralph, as it were.
You can just call her Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, she's kid Sarah Silverman. the kid-friendly version of Sarah Silverman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I didn't laugh a lot, and there's a lot of fan service to, like, oh, what is Disney now? Because they go to Disneyland, Digital Disneyland, and you do get to see an extra Stan Lee cameo, which I was not expecting. And then, so, sorry if I spoiled it for you there, but he's in there. Yeah, I know, I mean. and the ending, it just lacks a certain emotional weight, since they kind of expect you to just forget about that stuff for a lot of the movie, and then kind of try to make you, like, care about the story at the end when they finally go back around to it,
mm-hmm.
which I was not a fan of. That being said, I still think it's a movie that people should watch if they like the first one, since it's just more time with these characters. Yeah, I think it, but ultimately, I think it was kind of a disappointment to me. I think they could have done maybe cut like 30 minutes and then maybe had it a little bit more structurally tightened, and had it a little bit more concise to kind of what the first movie was. But overall, it's fine.
Okay. Cool.
What about you, Jason?
Well, let me tell you, the worst thing that I watched recently was Girl in the Spider's Web.
Which is not based off a book, right?
It is based off a book.
Did they write the book after the movie, though?
No.
Well, okay, no, wait.
No, wait, here.
The book is not written by the person who did the original trilogy.
No, but here is... I looked it up because I was curious. So this is the story. So originally, this guy, whatever his name was, Daniel...
This is a story of a girl.
No. Yeah, this is a story of a girl who became a man who wrote these books. No, so the guy that wrote the first three, originally he wanted to write like 10 of them. And then he died.
Right.
And so they had somebody else take over writing for him. And I think the new person has written 2, maybe 3 more. And so this was meant to be a reboot. Like a soft reboot, soft sequel.
Yeah, well, okay. So it's kind of a soft sequel, you said? Because they only made one of those, the Daniel Craig and, you know, the David
yeah.
Fincher.
No, I think it's meant to be like a sequel to the original trilogy and then also the David Fincher film. But also a reboot, because they do change things from the movie, like from the original trilogy and from the David Fincher one. So I don't know. This is just like the third incarnation of the character. And I just want to say, like, straight up, that I think the cast is great. I think Claire Foy is a tremendous actress, and that she was in another really great movie this year, which was Unsane, the Steven Soderbergh horror thriller movie, which was absolutely phenomenal. And she was great in that, and I think she's great in this. The biggest problem is that I don't think she's given anything to do. And to better explain that, if you have seen the trailer for this movie, you have literally seen everything that you will learn about her sister in the film.
Huh.
Because I think she might be in the movie for an additional 30 seconds.
That's not a whole bunch of time.
No, it's not.
And isn't that what, like, is the driving force behind the character?
That's what I thought it was. I remember we got done with that movie, and I was like, how on earth was that 2.5 hours long? Because there was probably 10 minutes worth of story in there.
Wow.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, like, there are...
And the rest being what, Jason?
Well, I was going to say, so there are some fun, fun, in quotations, fun, there are some fun, you know, man-torturing, male misogynistic pig, or male chauvinist pig torture moments. There's some stuff like that that's, you know, you get to see Elizabeth Slaughter do her thing. That's fun to watch. You get to see... There's a couple... There's one kind of fun... Oh, I keep hitting my mic. There's one kind of fun sniping sequence that's kind of cool. But otherwise, it's just like... there's a lot of stuff that they do, but it doesn't really feel like it leads towards anything. Like, okay. like there's a lot of... a really good example would be... I mean, not in terms of film, but just like it's like if somebody were to tell you, oh, hey, look, there's this box and you got to solve this maze. And when you get to the box, it's going to have all the answers in it. So you solve the maze and you get to the box, and instead of the box having answers, it's like, oh, there's another maze you got to go through, and that's what's in the box. So you got to go through that maze, and just like they just keep doing stuff, and it never really builds towards anything. The only other, like, really positive thing that I'll say is that Steve Merchant's in it, and I love Steve Merchant, and it's always fun to see him pop up in things.
Yeah.
And especially that we've been seeing him in more and more dramatic roles, which is kind of goofy to me.
I mean, the last thing I saw him in was Logan.
Yeah, exactly. And he plays an equally kind of dramatic role in this, although he's not as much of the movie. And... Yeah, I don't know. I suppose if you're like a really big fan, like I saw this with Caitlin, and she was really excited for it, and we went, and it was just not, like, neither of us were happy leaving that theater. So I don't know. I feel like if you just go online, you can, or if you rent it, you can just fast forward through like the boring stuff and just watch the good stuff.
Yeah. That sounds cool. Well, here's the thing that I'll add, is that most of the stuff that I've seen people talking about this film is in relation to it kind of being another, like, this studio trying to do their own version of, like, a Jason Bourne or a James Bond or a Mission Impossible, where they can just kind of keep doing these films with, like, no real connection, or, like, just as something to go to that involves this same character over the course of, like, many years.
Yeah, I gotcha. And, I don't know, I mean, I feel like in that movie there is a story somewhere, however they did not find it, or even get close to finding it.
It was all taken out in editing.
Yep, just like Fan4 Stick. Greatest Fantastic yep. Four movie we never got.
Yeah, and we'll never see.
Nope.
I'm sure.
All right, so I think that pretty much covers that. So why don't we get into ranking our... I went with 3, you got 6, so we decided to just go with 3. Our top 3 zombie genre mashup films. So I am going to go ahead and let you go first. Why don't you just give us your number 3?
Okay. You know what? I'm going to change my number 3. I had something, but I'm not really going to consider it a genre mashup, but maybe I'll include it in, like, you know, worthy mentions. Number 3, I would say, and I'll kind of cheat here and say 2 films, but they are a film and its sequel. which are Dead Snow.
Mm-hmm.
Dead Snow, which relates a lot to the film we'll be talking about, Overlord, which is Nazi zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And the first film is kind of like your typical get in, kind of not get out. A bunch of friends go to a cabin up on this mountain, and it's very cold. I think it's... I should probably have figured this out before I did this, but they're Swedish, or they're definitely in Northern Europe. Anyway, the kids go up to the cabin, and there's, you know, Nazi gold that is haunted and should not be meddled with, and the Nazis rise, and then, you know, it's very in line with the first Evil Dead, because the second film involves one character from the first film having a very similar situation that happens to Ash in the first Evil Dead, like getting a similar gimmick that he does, which involves a severed hand. Because the end of the first film is ridiculous. And then the second one is just flat out all ridiculous shock, or schlock, and like shocking moments throughout. Kind of that's what it is. They're really fun to set through, even though they can kind of be a little boneheaded and offensive from time to times. They're still like, you can see the person who made those is very... a very big fan of Sam Raimi, which is why I think they're good to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about all I gotta say on that one. So did you want to go with your number three?
Yeah. So I was just gonna say that it takes place in Norway.
All right. Right on.
So my number three, I was going to say, and I don't know if you've seen this or if I forced you to watch this, but I Sell the Dead.
Okay. I have not seen
you've
it.
You've not seen it. Okay. So, Nazi. Stupid.
Oh my God.
Anyway.
Jason, I'm leaving for the second time during this podcast. Goodbye.
Cool. Then I can just talk about I Sell the Dead the rest of the time.
Okay, right. Jason, bye.
So I Sell the Dead, stars, I can't even remember, Dominic Monaghan, and Ron Perlman, and a couple other people whose names I cannot remember. But Dominic Monaghan, and then I can't remember the other guy's name, but he's got this buddy, and basically they're grave robbers. That's how the movie starts. And then they find out that, like, there's zombies, and that people will pay more for zombies and other crazy corpses. And so they basically just start this... They enter this world of, like, zombie grave-robbing gangs. Yeah, and it's absolutely insane, and it's just as bonkers as it sounds. And it is super low-budget. Like, I would not be surprised if the budget for this movie was, like, $1,000. But, all of that being said, it is so much fun to watch. The idea that they came up with is super well executed. the B-low-budget horror movie special effects are just dead on. It's really fun, and I really enjoyed it. It's kind of a zombie heist movie, almost, or like a zombie gang movie. So yeah, that's my number three.
All right. Well, for my number two, I think a lot of people might like disagree with what I put as number two, but I'm gonna say it's the most mashup, like, of all the zombie films, because it's the one that, like, introduced the idea of making a zombie film, not just a straight horror film. And that's Return of the Living Dead, which is... story goes, there's two guys that made Night of the Living Dead. So they worked on it. One of them, George A. Romero. The other one is, I believe, and another thing I should have looked up before I did this, but this guy, he went on to do Night of the Living Dead. No one can make any money off of it because it's, like, public domain. That's why you see so many, like, bad ripoffs of, like, both remaking the film and also just, like, having it get re-releases on those horrible DVD collections you see at, like, the store.
Mm-hmm.
Like Walmart in a bargain bin. I am making sure I have the name of this gentleman before I move on. Gosh dang it. Because my keyboard likes to die. It is the Living Dead. Living. There we go. So this is going off from John Russo. John Russo is the one that had this idea. Because what he did was he made Night of the Living Dead canon in the universe of Return of the Living Dead, but there are two characters that start off the events of Return of the Living Dead where one of them is like, hey, you know that was based off a real event, but they had to change the facts, you know, right? I actually have, like, one of the canisters that started the event down in the basement at this storage facility. And so they go down there, and he's just like, all right, well, you want to see something? He's just like, oh, man. And it's, like, a decomposing corpse in, like a barrel, but it's all, like, sealed. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what? You're crazy, man. And then he's like, what if these things pop open? And he's like, ah, these are, like, military grade. There's no way they pop open. And he, like, hits it, like, either with his hand or his foot, and then it just, like, bursts open. And then they get noxious fumes, and then it unfolds the rest of the film. Which, this is the film that's famous for giving zombies the brains line. Mm. That has been, like, led to many jokes over the many years that it's been out. Or in much zombie media. And it is maybe, like, it plays it. The mashup here would be it's a zombie film if, like, the Three Stooges made a zombie film. Because it's so slapstick, but, like, tries to be so earnest because Three Stooges always, like, play it completely straight. I'm not saying that there's not wet comedy in there, but it's a lot of dry comedy. And a lot of the jokes come from just, like, situational as opposed to, like jokes per se. And the zombies in this film are, like, at once the most brutal zombies you'll ever encounter in almost any fiction, mm-hmm. any zombie fiction. But then also they can talk, and it's one of the most ridiculous things you've ever seen or heard,
yeah.
is probably the operative word there. And it's the linchpin to all this stuff kind of happening around zombies over the next, like 3 or 4 decades. And it's one that I recommend a lot because it opened the door to pretty much everything to come after, like, any kind of horror comedy or zombie comedy. And I think it's like, absolutely necessary viewing if you're a zombie fan.
Sweet. I think that I've only seen 2 Romero zombie movies, and one of them was the original Night of the Living Dead, which I watched with you. And the other was one where a zombie learned how to operate a gun, and I thought it was the dumbest thing I'd ever seen.
But I'm pretty sure that's Land of the Dead, isn't it?
I think you're right. Okay, so I'm pretty sure that my number 2 is your number 1. Is it, or which is Shaun of the Dead?
Yes.
All right. So we can both gush about Shaun of the Dead for a moment, even though I mean
I don't
let's
mind.
Let's be real. Everybody who needs to see this movie has probably already seen it.
I would think so.
I mean, you know, this is the movie, right, that, like, started Edgar Wright's amazing career.
As a filmmaker.
Yeah, as a filmmaker.
Because he'd done a lot of... He'd done specifically Spaced before this.
Spaced. He did TV. Did the TV land. But...
But not TV land. We can't say that. It's trademarked.
He did TV land. How about that? TV land.
Right. And, I mean, this kind of springs out from the episode of Spaced in which... the title character, or not title character of Spaced, but Simon Pegg, who plays Sean in Shaun of the Dead, he plays a character named Tim, and there's one episode where he like stays up all night and he plays Resident Evil 2 for like the entire episode.
That's so funny. See, I've never actually watched all of Spaced like you have.
I would say you should. No, it's not that easy to get a hold of anywhere.
That's been my main problem. But it is very high on the list.
Yeah, it's some good stuff.
But yeah, no, I love Shaun of the Dead. I still remember the first time I watched it. I thought it was absolutely hilarious, and then everybody died at the end. I mean, not everybody, but...
Yeah, and also your definition of what dead that's means. True.
I mean, okay. A lot of the main characters stop living traditional lives in like the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Yes, I would say Ed is still with us, and I don't think he was too far away from what he was when he was at the beginning of the film.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, he's happier now.
Yeah.
And I would highly recommend anyone who's actually watched Shaun of the Dead and has only watched Shaun of the Dead really owes it to themselves to go or like watch the special features on the DVD and Blu-ray, because there's little motion comics that they have that you can probably find them on YouTube too, but like fill in the plot holes of the film, and they kind of explain what happens to Ed between, like, how does Ed get from the cellar of the Winchester or Manchester, right?
Winchester, because it's named after the rifle, right? Yeah. In the bar.
The Winchester. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I was about to say, the one specific person who's yelling at this podcast right now, I'm sorry, Jace, I didn't know. I couldn't bring it into my mind, but it is the Winchester. How he gets from the cellar of the Winchester to the shed out in the back of Sean's yard. There's a motion comic for that, which is very funny. And also how the crazy girl, the girlfriend of Harry Potter, as it were, after she fights her way into the zombie crowd at the end with her boyfriend's severed leg, actually survives the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm definitely going to have to check that out then.
It's pretty good. And also, like Jason already said, if you haven't seen this movie, then you've really been around for a long time and not seen a movie that you would probably have stumbled across, I would have believed, at this point.
You're living your life wrong.
Yeah, and I don't say that lightly.
All right, so my number one, which I don't know if you've been able to guess, but is the film REC. Which is a zombie. Well, I don't want to give away what it is because that kind of spoils the ending.
Well, I think it's a little bit. It's weird to classify it as a zombie film, but it is a crossover and zombies are involved. But saying that is not giving everybody the full picture of what those movies
exactly.
are.
Yeah, exactly. And there are four. Although I'm really only a big fan of the first two. And the fourth one. The third one was weird.
It went off the rails in a way that no one could... I don't think anyone wanted.
But no, I love REC. For those who are not familiar, Quarantine is the English remake.
The American
remake.
Let's...
Which is not as good. And also, there is a Quarantine 2 that I have seen bits and pieces of, which does not follow the plot of REC 2. Right. But anyway, I'm a huge fan of REC. I love the feeling of claustrophobia that they nail. For those who haven't seen it, it's about a group of it's a newscaster, right? And she gets locked in or quarantined inside an apartment building where basically there's zombies. And they just keep going up floor by floor by floor. And it is shot in the style of a found footage movie. However, I will say that in this one, I kind of buy that the camera rolls the whole time because, I mean, that's basically the only thing that they're told to do that's one of the only things that you're told to do when you're, you know, a cameraman is never stop shooting. And so I know that it's not a perfect answer for why they never stop recording, but at the same time, I don't know, I feel like it makes sense enough to me.
Right, and the thing is, every argument I've ever heard about the found footage genre, which has kind of gone by the wayside, and, you know, it had its time, and people say it's dead, but, you know, whatever, if there's another filmmaker that comes around and does something interesting with it, everyone's going to be like, hey, the revival of found footage, and you're just like, shut up. People just want to make the films that they want to make. But I think at least if you just have one little kernel of why the film is still rolling or why the camera is still mm-hmm. recording, then I think anybody who argues about that stuff afterwards is just like, I'm not saying shut your brain mm-hmm. off and not wonder about that stuff, but understand that this is what you're watching and you should kind of know that going in. Otherwise, you're just like completely, you're constantly just making yourself upset by watching films yeah. like this.
And I absolutely treasure this movie, and I think that if you're a fan of the horror genre, or, you know, even just specifically zombie movies, that this is definitely a must watch. So, having gotten...
Yeah, and I would actually say, this... Jason, that you brought up that Quarantine was not as good, and, you know, it's not when it's compared to what the original was. And, like, the original Wreck and Quarantine are, like, they follow the same beats, right? It's pretty much not a shot-for-shot remake, but almost the same film.
Yeah, it's similar. And I don't know. I feel like this is a case very much of Let the Right One In, where it's not so much that the remake is bad, it's just like, why?
Yeah, I never quite got that, but the same case for that, and I'll kind of say this, is that both of these like American remakes of these beloved, you know, foreign films, mm-hmm. foreign made films, like they do to a crowd that hasn't watched those or wouldn't normally watch a foreign film. Like, they see this and go, like, oh, this was based off another film, and then if they like that, they would go see the original and then make up their mind which mm-hmm. one was better. So, if it's giving it more exposure, the original one, then I feel like those remakes do have a purpose.
Yeah.
As, like, gatekeepers for... Not gatekeepers, but, like, they're able to introduce a crowd that wouldn't normally find those and be like, even if it's not the best, like, it still gets you to where mm-hmm. you're going.
Yeah, I gotcha. I don't know. My love for those two films, especially Let the Right One In, just runs so deep. So deep! Alright.
Right.
Well, let's get into it and start talking about Overlord, because I couldn't think of another funny name to say.
Please don't. let's just go.
Alright, so real quick, let's just... We'll be spoiler-free for a few moments and just quickly give impressions of the film, our first impressions of the film, and then we'll talk spoilers for a few minutes, and then we'll move on to something else. So, Donnie, what did you think? What were your initial thoughts on Overlord?
I think the first time I watched it, overall, I thought it was going to be a little bit playing more to the cheap mm-hmm. seats as a kind of film that I was expecting going into it, because I was very much expecting, like, more like faster editing, something that kind of like, you know, like some of those movies, lesser movies that are made that are like, oh, we have to have like an attack like every 10 minutes, otherwise we're going to lose the interest of the audience. Like, this movie doesn't care about the audience. This movie is, it cares about like, this is a story we're going to tell, and we're going to take the time to do it, and if there's nothing super interesting that happens for like 15 to 20 minutes, then that's how it's going to be until we like do what we want with our characters the way that we want to do it. And I would say that was the kind of film I was not expecting. I was expecting the other film, which was like, oh, there, we're going to see like a bunch of action all throughout. We're not going to like, there's not going to be like a dull moment. It's not going to be quiet ever. It's, you know, it's not going to be smart, but it's a very like meticulously structured and paced film for the genre that it is for. And I think that caught me by surprise, and I had to kind of get into the flow of what it was doing, but the movie just is very competent. It doesn't think that the audience is stupid and knows that they're going to wait and, like, get to know these characters and kind of decompress and think about what's happening as opposed to being told everything.
Yeah, no, I was also really surprised because I was also expecting just a nonstop stupid blood fest. And I mean, don't get me wrong, that part of the movie is definitely in the movie. But I was surprised because it's actually like the war parts of the film are actually really good. And there were some genuinely really touching moments and some really tough stuff to watch. And I really liked it. All right.
Yeah, you wouldn't know until you get up to a certain point in the film that this was had not necessarily. Well, we'll get into spoilers, but you don't know what the film is until a certain point. It's a certain film up to the twist or the reveal, and then it's not that film anymore.
Unless we had seen the trailers,
which is like. In the golden era, which we do not live, and we had a little bit back before we were even born, where like a trailer said absolutely nothing mm-hmm. about the film and showed nothing about the film, like this film would have been like the huge shock and reveal and stuff like that. But otherwise, like yeah, we're so bombarded with trailers and spoilers all the time that it's kind of hard to avoid.
Well, it made me think a lot of the first time I watched From Dusk Till Dawn. Because I did mm-hmm. not know that movie was about vampires the first time that I watched it.
Yeah, which is like a crazy way to go into that film, but it is very. That's the way that it's supposed to be viewed.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely.
Like, as long as like somebody like recommends or says that, or like say like, oh, this is a good film, or we knew going in that like we live in a perfect world where every single film is like very very good and has something to say and is very competent. Going into it knowing nothing is the best place to go, but we don't live in a perfect world, Jason. It's never gonna happen.
All right, so let's get into spoilers. Real quick, I just want to talk about the opening scene of the movie and just the craziness of what's going on in the airplane. Them jumping out of the plane, them landing in the water, like. That was on par with, either, you know, parts of Hacksaw Ridge or the opening scene to Saving Private Ryan. I mean, it was just frantic. It was crazy. It was, parts of it were hard to watch because, you know, you're just meeting all these characters and don't get me wrong. I mean, a lot of them are falling into character archetypes of this kind of movie. But at the same time, you're like, oh, that's the funny guy. That's the dick guy. These are all the guys. Dick guy. That's the rude guy. these are all guys.
My favorite character archetype. These the dick
all,
guy.
These are all the guys that I'm gonna get to know and get to. And they're all dead. Oh, not all of them. Mm-hmm.
Well, except for the very specific ones that annoy you for sure.
And even then, though, there's
I mean, obviously, Wyatt Russell, which I did not realize that that was Wyatt Russell for the longest time.
That's, you. I mean, you know that that's like, this is the story chronicling Snake Plissken's ancestor during World War II. But it's kind of, especially at the end of this film, during the final confrontation, when he puts on his Kurt Russell face, like, it's hard to... It actually kind of takes you out of the film a little bit, but it's pretty good.
The other thing... Oh, and we already touched on this. One of the things that I really praised it for, or really praise it for, is not just jumping straight into zombies! But...
Right, not even having, like, an opening scene where it's like, oh, there's an operation or experiment happening in the basement, and you don't really know what's happening, but it's supposed to prepare you. No, it starts... It's a World War II film until it's not a World War II film, like, what is it, 30 to 45 minutes into the film?
I mean, because I would argue about halfway through the movie, because there's a good part of the movie where you know that something is going on, but they don't come out and say it's zombies. And even then, I also, you know, another thing that I applaud this movie for is that it's not just the zombie that we all know and love. but it's not just another zombie from another zombie movie. I mean, when they inject, I don't remember the guy who's hurt. They inject him with the syringe, and you know when he just immediately what is it? He like twists his neck backwards.
Well, he first he gets up and like he's been shot through the chest, specifically probably into the heart, and he bled out and he died, and then he's just like, oh, he starts touching his chest hole. And he's just like, I don't really feel anything, at all. And then he starts, like, getting super heated. Like, his body starts overheating, and then he starts, like, bashing his head against the side of the, or, like, the rafters in the attic there. And then that's when he, like, hits it so hard that he, like, snaps his neck, his head all the way to his back. Like, all the way back. And then he snaps it back, and then you can see, like, the bones coming up out of, like, his shoulders. It's very unsettling.
But that was something that I loved, because it wasn't the traditional, like, oh, I'm a zombie, blah, 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 blah.
Right, he didn't come back with, like, menace. Like, he came back exactly how he was a moment ago. But just not dead anymore. Yeah, he's just like,
what's going on?
What's happening, guys? Did I get knocked out?
that was great. One of the other scenes that I just really quickly want to say that I loved is when they're first walking through the field, and the one guy steps on a landmine. Just because, I mean, it comes out of nowhere, and I don't think that like I can't remember the last time that I have not seen something coming as much as I did in that part of Overlord. I loved it.
Right, yeah, because it's so early, and we just seen so much death.
Yeah, and you're...
We thought it was a quiet moment, and that, like, the characters were getting to... Yes.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, you're right. We just went through this crazy opening sequence. We just saw the captain get executed. You're thinking now, okay, this is the breather. And then instead, this guy steps on a landmine and...
Yeah. And it's really unfortunate, because, like, they do kind of play a cheap trick. I think it was a little bit cheap, like, him, like, oh, yeah, this is going to be great in my novel. And I was like, oh, God, he's dead for sure. But, like, that's when you're playing into the tropes of the genre. And you're not in a zombie film yet, but you're in a war film, and that's... Like, that kind of thing would be in a war film. Like, that's not a horror trope. That's just like, oh, you have this character that they're like, oh, yeah, when I get back home, you're like, shut up. You're like, I'm going to put this as a chapter in my novel. You're like, shut up. And then, you know, to some degree, I was just like, everybody's gonna die. Everybody in this film is gonna die. So I see what they're doing. I was just not expecting that specific thing to happen and it not be like horror related. Well, it is horrifying what happens, but it's not like horror film related, or it's not it's cheap, but it's an effective like tactic. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think that the movie is cheapened from it. It just catches you off guard. Which I think is like very, it's like an encapsulation of this film. Is like I see what is happening here once it happens, but like I'm not gonna say it wasn't good, because it's very they knew what they were doing. Could we talk about the villain? I was wondering what your thoughts were on the villain, because he's like this commander who's stationed. He's the Nazi who's like in command pretty much of this village of where the church is, where they run the experiments, and it's the church that these soldiers are trying to get to destroy, because it's a radio beacon or tower that they need to make sure goes down before the soldiers hit Normandy, because it's D-Day. The commander was like, it's stuff that I've seen before, like this sleazy commander who is just kind of pure evil, but he's very charming, and he is like, misogynistic, but he's very charming. These are things that I've seen before in other films, but like they have their place, and the direction is so good that I kind of let it be. And he plays it really well. I think people probably will know this actor more from Game of Thrones than anything else, but he played a good guy too in that live-action adaptation of Ghost in the Shell the other year as Bato, who is like the partner of the main character in that film, and I really like him. And by the end of the film, I took him as a serious villain. It's kind of crazy how, like, he becomes kind of like the end boss of, if we were to call this a Wolfenstein film, he's kind of the end boss against Wyatt Russell's character, Ford, I believe, who also injects himself with the serum since he has no other options. And I thought that that fight was not, like, overly dramatic or filled with special effects. I thought that was actually, it stayed as long as it had to. I think that was kind of the encapsulation of all that, of all the things I had to ramble about, but
that was the encapsulation of that question that you asked me.
Yeah, right? I'm terrible.
I think that my only real complaint is that, or one of my only real complaints is that I got everything that I wanted out of the first half of the movie. And I just wish that there would have been more over-the-top craziness in the second half of the movie.
Right, like there was going to be some kind of, like, because they have all these, like, test subjects locked away, and did you kind of expect, like, oh, if someone's going to hit the button, everybody's going to, like, be let loose, and we're going to have, like, bunch of zombies.
And I was thinking, obviously no movie's ever going to go totally this crazy, but I was thinking just, the ending of Hardcore Henry, but with these crazy zombie guys.
Right. As opposed to, because that movie's ending is
bananas.
Is a lot. A lot of people, a lot of action, a lot of ridiculousness.
And I guess that's what I was expecting, and I didn't get it, which, isn't a bad thing. I just think that I wish that they would have spent more time showing Wyatt Russell being like, "Oh, look what I can do."
What?
You know, when they release all of the other zombies and they're all going towards him, and yeah, I guess I would have just liked to see more of that. And I feel like it would have been an opportunity for them to, I don't know, get even crazier with the zombie thing, you know, like, oh, look what else we can do. But
right, as opposed to like them always kind of keeping it, like playing it close to their chest, which is like, even when they introduce or do something with the kind of the MacGuffin of the film, which is like the serum that brings, you know, corpses back to life, and then in some cases when injected in a living tissue, then it like makes you a super soldier if you don't die from it. Like, they surprisingly are just like, yeah, they're going to be a little bit stronger, but, like, they're not really Captain America. Like, you're not going to see this huge fight, like, play out, which is, like, at that point in a story, I don't know if you really expect it to go one way or the other, and you probably had your suspicions about, like, oh, and then you're like, oh, okay, whatever. Yeah.
So, I do have one last question, but they, I feel like they kind of they set up a sequel throughout the movie, just in terms of, I forget the character's name, but the one guy who's like, it doesn't stop till we get Hitler, right? And they even, I think they even end with that line that it doesn't stop until we get Hitler. And ignoring the fact that I feel like this might have been kind of a box office bomb, Do you think that it needs a sequel, or that you even want one?
No, I think this just, I don't want one just because I feel like this is kind of its own story, and like there might be like other places that have same experiments going on, so there's always like an option for another story to be told that could have Overlord
like
in the
Cloverfield?
Title.
Cloverfield?
shut up. But in this instance, like the sequel to this film is just like, hey, go watch like Saving Private Ryan, or go see or watch Band of Brothers. You know, they'd be like, oh, they did their crazy thing and made sure that the secret serum and stuff was never discovered and exposed to the world, so now like World War II just goes on like it did, and so like now you can just watch like other World War II films and just be like, in this alternate reality question mark where this stuff occurred, like then like the rest of this stuff just like goes by like normal, like everything went by without anyone noticing. So there's no way, there's no reason to expound on it if you don't have to, but if done by, you know, if they had the right talent behind it, they could bring back the same characters. I wouldn't mind having a sequel, but I don't think it's necessary.
By the way, I did just look it up, and it it grossed $38.1 million on a $38 million budget. So you're gonna have to get some really strong DVD sales for it to, you know, warrant a sequel. But either way, I'm content,
because I
loved the movie that we got, and I remember the first time I saw a trailer for this, and I was like, oh, that looks stupid. And then I remember the second time I saw it, I like actually watched it, and I was like, oh, it could be kind of good.
I think the smartest thing they did was completely detach it from Cloverfield, because it works very well as its own horror film, and if they would have had any kind of reference to anything Cloverfield, I think it would have lessened the film.
I think that I'm curious, because I know that that's kind of been their thing, is they just pick up these scripts and go, eh, we'll sprinkle a little Cloverfield dust in on that. And I mean, I
which they got away with the first time.
And that's what I was going to say. Is that 10 Cloverfield Lane is still very much the movie that was originally there. I'm more curious into like how much they changed the Cloverfield paradox.
I don't think a whole bunch. I think they specifically had a film that was something else, and or the what was it? The God Particle was what it was called beforehand. So they had that, and they reshot and put in some stuff that said on the station they had to like mention Cloverfield, because I don't think that's like that probably wasn't stated before by anybody like on the space station, and then they filmed all the stuff that happened
that,
on
that
Earth.
That 1 5-second ending credit scene.
And, well, no, there's like a whole beeline in that film where they keep cutting to Earth with the Cloverfield monsters, which would have been as bad as that final reveal is in Cloverfield Paradox, it would have been a lot better if they didn't have a story on Earth.
It is.
It's just ridiculous.
Oh, well.
Well, here's to hoping that they kind of keep their own bullshit to, like, films they make separately. Like, they keep on saying is going to be the next actual sequel to, like, Cloverfield, as opposed to, here's a film that we got a license, or we bought, and then now we're going to shoehorn stuff in.
We get it.
So that's good.
Anyway. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have any more thoughts to share about Overlord. Is there anything that you feel like we're missing or that we haven't touched on?
No, just a good film overall. I think it's just a good horror film to watch. Whether you see it in theaters, which I don't, you probably have less of a chance now to do that. So just wait until it comes out on home media.
That is very true,
streaming.
But at the same time, if you can see it in theaters, I think that this is one definitely worth checking out in theaters. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so real quick, let's do our recommendations. So I have a list of two films that, in a sense, if you enjoyed this, I think you would enjoy these as well. I don't know if you have one that you would like to share first.
This is going to be weird, because earlier in the podcast I had mentioned how Return of the Living Dead was like the Three Stooges like making a film based on Night of the Living Dead. Or just like having kind of the same tone or material, but like turning into something that's a complete goof. And it's a film I just watched because I got the Blu-ray, but Young Frankenstein. I would, because of like the mad scientist and like reanimating dead corpse. If you want, like, this was something that was very serious and played straightforward from Overlord, and then so like go enjoy a little bit of Mel Brooks and see what he does, because I just watched, it's been a long time since I saw it until recently, and that movie is, like, just a gem. It's like, it's good.
It's great. Alright, so I have two that I'll quickly talk about. The first one is Dog Soldiers, which is literally the same movie, but with werewolves.
Is
almost,
it really?
I mean, it's... Okay, it's a little different. It's soldiers, and they're doing an exercise in this village where they run into werewolves, and then it's them versus the werewolves. And it's there's one really, really great line in it where one of the guys is getting eaten, and I think he's got a grenade, and he yells, "I hope I give you the shits." He's being devoured.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's probably a little bit dumber, but if you liked this, then this is up your alley. And then the other film that this is another horror, quote-unquote, bait-and-switch movie, just in the terms that it starts out as one thing and then about halfway through turns into something else, and that is Kevin Smith's Red State, which, as you know, I champion all the time because I absolutely love it, and recommend other people check it out. It starts out as this crazy cult movie, and then about halfway through turns into just this balls-to-the-wall crazy action movie. And I absolutely adore it. So anyway, those are some films that you might enjoy if you enjoyed Overlord, at least in Donnie and I's opinion.
I do have one more, because if you're it just came to me, but if you're continuing to go down the line of something that's like a slow burn and horror, and it's not really something that gets into your face until the action starts, kind of like this film is, I would recommend The Descent. That is actually like a really good, it starts off with a bang, but then like the rest of the movie is very like drawn out until it gets to the horrible stuff. But it's very tense, and I would say I felt a lot the same way for, like, if you told me that Overlord and The Descent were like made by the same person, I might actually believe you, because the tone is just kind of in the same place.
No, that's very true. All right, so really quickly, we will do our 5-word summaries. Oh man. All right, so before I say mine, I just want to say that if you remember the trailer, the one image that they really seemed to drive home was the main guy looking through a hole in the wall. And so my brief summary was, so that's what's in the hole.
So that's the hole. Wait, yeah, by one. I would say, I'll let you slide. It's one word.
And it's our good show, so it doesn't matter.
Jeez Louise. My 5-word summation of the film would be Snake Plissken Jr. kicks ass.
Oh, that's a good one. All right. Well, with that, I think we will be closing down. As always, you can follow us on the Twitter machine at The Outer Frame. You can also find us on Facebook, just The Outer Frame. Our theme music is done by Dr. Tub Thumper. That's on his birth certificate. First name Doctor, middle name Tub, last name Thumper. And then our art of our logo is done by Preston Alexander, who you can find on Instagram and Twitter under the name PRALEX, I believe. So check out all of their things, although I don't have any idea if Dr. Tub Thumper has made any more music under that title. But regardless, check it out.
Someday maybe the truth will come out.
This episode,
but not today.
Anyway. All right, well, thank you so much for listening, and have yourselves a wonderful evening, and we'll talk at you next week. Bye.
Right on. See ya.